This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 14th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 338. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I wore a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, the Hogue Commission's public hearings into 2019 and 2021 election meddling by China. Former Steveston Richmond East Conservative MP Kenny Chu was one of the witnesses, and he joins me to talk about the public inquiry. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The Foreign Interference Commission has finished its spring phase of public hearings. It climaxed April 10th when Prime Minister Justin Trudeau testified.
Be careful how I say this so it's not identifiable. There was a foreign government official based in Canada who was taking credit for a certain thing having happened in Canada in their reporting to a superior or to their home country. And just the fact that a foreign official was taking credit for having delivered a particular outcome in no way meant that anything that particular official did actually created the outcome. Bragging is not doing. So one can imagine a diplomat in a far-off land, wanting to write back home to say, see, look what I did, aren't I good? We got the outcome we wanted, perhaps. When that individual may not have had any actual bearing on the outcome of the particular event.
Among the witnesses, Kenny Chu, the Conservative MP for Steveston Richmond East from 2019 to 2021. He lost in the 2021 election. Leaks from Canada's spy agency CSIS indicate China's consul general at the time, Tong Chaoling, took credit for helping defeat Chu and elect Liberal Parham Baines. The commission heard evidence of a coordinated disinformation campaign against Chu, a Hong Kong democracy supporter who voted to condemn China's genocide against Uyghur Muslims, and he proposed a registry of foreign government lobbyists.
I thought I would be protected by my country, and I was deeply troubled, disappointed that I was exposed, and the government doesn't seem to care. And now that through the commission, I've learned that they've known all about it. It's almost like I was drowning and they are watching. And the best they could do, by the way, is to let me know that I'm drowning. I don't need their notification, I need their help. And so that's the overall disappointment mixing with a emotion of anger that I have.
Kenny Chu is my guest on this edition of the podcast.
Set the scene, paint the picture, and describe the experience of being a witness in that hearing room with Commissioner Hogue, all the lawyers, and yep. Being under the spotlight.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me and giving me this chance. It was a surreal experience because it's something that many Canadians like myself has longed for and asked for and demanded for years now. And finally, we have a public inquiry on foreign interference in front of us. The only thing is, as you have also seen, there are councils representing different parties that are gathered together in that hearing, and they all get the chance to ask questions. But one situations developed a couple of days ago, and I'm sure you're aware that you know, many of them were complaining to the commissioners that they were not given enough time to process some of the documents that's been unclassified, declassified, and released to them. And so Judge Hogue had to, you know, do some rearrangement with the schedule in order to accommodate it to the best they can. Now, that is testimony to the immediate testimony to the very fact that this commission has a very stringent schedule that has put on it. Normally, you would want to get to the bottom of things. You would you know have the rights to exhaust your witnesses and be able to, you know, find out how, like I said, deep and why foreign interference has been in Canada. But unfortunately, the whole commission has been structured in very focused on 2019 and 2021. Anything that happens prior to 2019 election or after 2021 elections would not be covered by this, by state and also state sanctioned actors in the foreign interference actions. There is also a little bit on transnational repression issues, but otherwise, it's just laser focus in these two periods. That's very narrowed, and that's also very problematic. But having said all that, I'm glad at least after the Rosenberg report, after David Johnson trying to sweep it under the carpet, we now have Judge Hogue, who seemed to understand the importance of this. She impressed me by changing her mind and granting access to witnesses, interrogation of witnesses, to parties that are not full participants. And even though Conservative Party, for example, the NDP, they don't have rights to access to classified documents still, but at least they get to ask questions of the prime ministers, of ministers, of MPs, and former MPs. That, to me, it's a good sign that her change of heart has told me that she is serious about getting to the bottom of this. But unfortunately, as you have also mentioned, that she is under a nearly impossible schedule, having to produce a initial report by the early May, and then come up with a full report by the end of this year and next year. And so I, you know, through the human contact, the personal contact with commission counsels, I realize that these are Canadians who genuinely want to get to the bottom of it. They want to filter out the political noise. But at the same time, I don't know. I wasn't sure. I'm still not sure if they have the enough time and also the enough access to, you know, outside of 2021, 2019 elections background information to do a proper job.
Did you learn anything new from Trudeau's testimony? Did anything stand out from him or other witnesses?
I was actually as surprised as many Canadians that not only that the Prime Minister, perhaps because he's a busy person, did not read you know, many of the summary analysis and reports provided by our very professional yet limited national security and intelligence apparatus. I would have thought that the Prime Minister would at least personally consume some of these products that the apparatus has produced. But Prime Minister Trudeau had indicated that he relied mostly on verbal updates. And that becomes a problem because any verbal updates by his staff, be it the chief of staffs or the national security intelligence advisors, whatever, this becomes another filter by a non-professional, the people who are not in the game. And I thought Canadians want our decision maker to be able to look at the evidence, the intelligence, the informations, and make a informed decisions how to handle that. Yes, intelligence is not evidence, but a repeating pattern of intelligence, a multiple posting of similar intelligence would at least demand the deeper digging of problems, and therefore it demands actions from our decision maker, and that is not what I observed had happened. The other thing, Bob, that I observed is that there is a interesting discrepancy that happened. Obviously, it's now become clear to everybody that the Justin Trudeau Liberal government had put in place in 2018 to handle foreign interference and disinformation spreading, etc. They have modeled it after the United States Democratic Party presidential candidate Barack Obama, his conundrum is, you know, he was campaigning for re-election, and so the whole structure is built on assumptions that it would be, you know, mostly English or French disinformation. And secondly, it will be on platforms that can be held accountable by authorities. And we know that this is not true in the geopolitical reality that we're in today. Canada, it's now facing, you know, it's the security intelligence apparatus has been saying significant challenges from China, perhaps also Iran and India. Are we ready to face the disinformations in a foreign language? You know, say for example, if the Persian-speaking communities in Greater Vancouver or Toronto has been under attack by disinformation, trying to sow deceit and hatred, you know, against our institution or our politicians. Say, for example, are they ready to counter that disinformation? Secondly, what I've also observed is that they assume that they will be able to call, just like the disinformation article posted on Facebook, they will be able to get Facebook to pull it down the shelf, and Facebook did, but you know, what number do you dial for something that you realize on Douyin, assuming that you actually detect the disinformation on Douyin or Xiaohongshu or QQ or WeChat, disinformation spreading under the mother company of Tencent? Would they be able to get them to parliamentary committees and hold them to account? I am very doubtful of that happening. It doesn't seem like the panel of five, the site task force are structured to be able to handle that, let alone a rapid response mechanism. So the last issue is also perhaps as a racialized minority in Canada, I am even more concerned, and that is I detected a sense of bias because the panel of five had indicated that they, I can't remember whether it's the site task force or the panel of five, but nonetheless, one of these leadership groups, they detected this information being spread in among Chinese Canadians communities, attacking, as you said, Aaron O'Toole, smearing him, and also spreading this information about myself personally, completely falsifies accused And even they detected that, they realized that it's in the Chinese community. So they didn't realize, they didn't take any action because it's Chinese disinformation. To me, that's problematic because the Chinese community in Canada is huge. Just like Aaron O'Toole said, merely in British Columbia, you have over 600,000 WeChat users. And it looks like that our bureaucrats, the top echelon of our bureaucrats, are willing to let these Canadians be subjected to disinformation's effect and impacts. And what I quoted is just, you know, not the biggest province in Canada. If you take into account how many Ontario residents would have WeChat accounts, say, for example, then you will become even more concerning and worrying. So I think we're flying blind. And I don't know if the bureaucrats who are in charge of these site task force, you know, panel of five, CEIPP, and many other acronyms that the prime minister have mouthed many times throughout this couple of years. I don't know if they are equipped to handle that. The level of disinformation and the kind of insidious hate and distrust. And then last but not least, and Bob, I think in order to be serious about countering disinformation, we have to face the fact that this is a persistent and constant issues that we are facing. As the commission was listening and hearing MP Han Dong, there were articles being spread in WeChat characterizing Han Dong as being persecuted. And the reason for the persecution that he faced, it's only because that he is mainland Chinese. That's the farthest from the truth. Han Dong has been granted a full standing, having access to all the secret and classified documents that are not permitted by, you know, by the commissioner to say, for example, the NDP or the Conservative Party. So until the day when we wake up and realize that, you know, this is disinformation is permeating and continuing their impact on Canadian society and do something about it, I'm very concerning and worrying for what it's going to do. These persistent permeating disinformation, it's to sow the seeds for you know, distrust of our institutions. And come election time, you know, that disinformation, it's only to harvest what they have sold. And so, you know, our leadership, our politicians, and also the people who are in charge of national securities and apparatus, they need to understand this also.
You mentioned Douyin. For our readers that don't know, that's the Chinese version of TikTok. You know, TikTok for North American audiences and European audiences is a different type of app than the TikTok that people only in China are allowed to use. And you also made a reference there to the Little Red Book, another app which is quite popular on Chinese language social media. Again, another app which is used for propaganda purposes, an app that is also surveilled by Beijing, by the Chinese Communist Party.
My guest is Kenny Chu, the former Conservative MP for Steveston and Richmond East and a witness at the Hogue Commission public inquiry into foreign interference. And we're talking about the foreign interference inquiry, which is looking at Canada's 2019 and 2021 elections. Commissioner Marie-Josée Hogue's interim report deadline is May 3rd. More hearings are expected this fall, and Hogue is also hearing sensitive national security evidence behind closed doors. The public hearings in Ottawa so far did not hear evidence from 2019 when incumbent Liberal MP Joe Pescosolito's team included Eileen Chen, a pro-China protester. The hearings also did not include evidence from 2021 when former PPC candidate Ivan Pak set up the Chinese Canadians Go to Vote Association, whose supporters worked to defeat Chu.
But should this really have started earlier? Should this have looked at the 2015 election? Because of the role that Raymond Chan, the former Richmond Liberal MP, former cabinet minister in the Chrétien government, and looked at his role as a fundraiser for the Liberals, shouldn't they have followed the money?
Bob, you're asking me in the perfect world that we don't live in what I wish. And yes, most certainly, I would agree with you that during 2015 and 2019, the majority mandate that Justin Trudeau have, that would be the perfect time. The establishment of all these national security apparatus and layers and layers of mechanism to handle should come out of that, study and commission instead. However, we know that didn't happen. And our political decision maker has now, I don't know if how many Canadians actually wonder why Trudeau Prime Minister has persistently refused to accept CSIS's briefings and notes and very explicit analysis indicating problems from the CCP, PRC side. When just based on a CSIS briefing note that Mr. Trudeau had decided to jump on his feet in the Parliament of Canada, in the chamber, and denounce India. Yes, I understand that it is a killing, but if you don't take actions on certain actions on in response to foreign interference activities, who knows where it may get escalated to. So there is certainly this discrepancy that I've also learned. Why did a prime minister ignore 34, CSIS and other security apparatus updates on foreign interference? This is just within the 2019-2021 election periods when he just jumped on his feet and announced boldly, against Indians alleged interference and killing of our own citizen. That makes me, very puzzled. In the same way, he was bold enough to confront the Chinese President Xi Jinping in Bali in 2022, I believe it's October or November, and confront him. And they proudly let the Canadian media know that, the Prime Minister has told Xi Jinping that, this is not acceptable for an interference and all that good stuff. And yet, come to now, facing it, I don't see there's a lot of trust and confidence in the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, CSIS, products consistently. Why is that? And last but not least, they have decided to this day is the Liberal Party staffer had decided to alert candidate Han Dong that CSIS is watching, that they alerted them that CSIS is paying attention when Michael Chong, a sitting MP, was being targeted by Chinese council staff in Toronto, and yet they kept their mouth shut and not briefing Michael Chong. This discrepancy, it's also extremely glaring, and unfortunately nobody has asked that question, and we may not be able to find the answers to these discrepancies and answers questions and be able to hold the government and the Prime Minister and the Liberal Party to account.
As reported in the Breaker.news, the Coquitlam School District, the third largest in British Columbia, sent 11 teachers and 8 managers and elected trustees to China during spring break. Coquitlam hosts a controversial Confucius Institute. Around the same time, 5 MPs and senators visited Communist Party officials in Beijing and Shanghai for bilateral meetings, including Toronto MP Han Dong and Vancouver NDP MP Don Davies.
Here we have a school board in British Columbia. Here we have a group of senators and members of parliament going to China to try to normalize relations when so many questions persist about how China meddled in our democratic process. What do you think about that?
Well, I think immediately I think of many of these people are tone deaf. They may not be able to read the room and may not be able to look at what's happening around them. And that's really unfortunate. But at the same time, you have Canadian Minister of International Trade visiting China, promoting business while the two Michaels were still incarcerated. I think many of these dictatorial regime, they realize how to motivate, how to incentivize politicians and also those who are in power. Some will respond positively to praises and just giving you a reception that it's extraordinary, impressive, just nothing but ribbon cutting and also attention. Others respond to perhaps money, and then there are others that are sensitive to scandals, and finally there's also other benefits that they will be able to corrupt somebody. It's common knowledge that that's how corruption of these administrators or power holder and decision makers happen. Now, I mean, when I was a school district trustee in Richmond, I was very proud of our district's decision to artificially limit ourselves on foreign students enrollment, because it's like fentanyl for a school district to keep on expanding their enrollment of foreign students when BC enrollment continues to dip. This is in the 10 years ago and 15 years ago. And so for them, it would be better to welcome, international students. But Richmond, for example, realized how volatile this is. So we artificially constrain ourselves to limit the size of international student here. But not all school districts are doing that. International students become an easy money, and they become a good income for the good districts. And once you get used to the easy income and already budgeted an expenditure assuming that income, you become basically at the mercy of the source countries, be it Saudi Arabia, as we have seen, and also perhaps also China. They weaponize a lot of things that they can get their hands on in Australia, barley, and also red wines. They have also done similar weaponizing their international students' trade and other businesses in Australia. So it is not inconceivable that the Chinese Communists will also use this. If you don't, I'm just imagining, alter the, or at least not mention about June 4th, Tiananmen Square, what happened. If you don't do that, we're not going to let the international student come to you. During the hearing of the commissioner, I think Han Dong's campaign manager the nominations campaign manager was asked a question about the alleged Chinese officials interfering and threatening the students by withdrawing their visas. And then the manager responded by saying, everybody knows that it is Canada that issues the student permits. Yes, he is not wrong. But on the other hand, in an authoritarian, totalitarian regimes, there are many ways, as we have seen and heard witnesses testifying, to suppress oppositions and also force, exert, coerce, other similar, their citizens here in Canada. Say, for example, exit control, it's a big, huge issue in authoritarian regimes such as Russia and it's, in China, but also it's becoming a problem in Hong Kong. In other words, they could withdraw and declare and nullified your passport. So would that not be a problem for international students studying in Canada to have their passport canceled, for example? I'm just imagining. So until we get out our heads on these naivety and face the reality and then try to live within our means for public office holders, it will continue to present our soft side and our weak side to countries such as Saudi Arabia or Iran or even PRC to exploit. And nobody wants to see that, subjugating our sovereignty, subjugating to corruption by these countries. But in order for them to do differently, people, Canadians, we actually need to demand that things be done differently. And that's what I hope journalists such as yourself, Bob, be able to pass on a message.
I'll keep on passing that message along. We thank you again for joining us on the podcast. Look forward to having you on again after we see the first report by Commissioner Hogue.
Thank you, Bob.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Taipei slams Russia's foreign minister for claiming Taiwan is part of China. Chinese Communist Party has never governed Taiwan, counters government. On Tuesday, Sergei Lavrov met with Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi in Beijing. Taiwan's foreign ministry said collusion between Moscow and Beijing does not contribute to the stability of the Taiwan Strait and region. It said the authoritarian convergence of the two countries inflicts serious damage to international peace, stability, and the rules-based world order. In Kyoto news, ex-Otani interpreter charged with over $16 million bank fraud. The U.S. Department of Justice said Ippel Mizuhara transferred the money from November 2021 to January 2024 without the player's knowledge or permission to pay off his own gambling debts incurred with an illegal bookmaking operation. Shohei Ohtani, who moved to the LA Dodgers in December on a 10-year, $700 million contract, spoke to law enforcement last week and denied authorizing Mizuhara's wire transfers. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Konger accused of insulting Chinese anthem at volleyball match sang, "Do you hear the people sing?" Court hears. The police officer who arrested the man told the court the defendant had earlier said he does not like the China team and the Chinese anthem. The defense said the man has autism and ADHD. Chan Pak-yui, 21, pleaded not guilty of intentionally insulting the Chinese national anthem last June when China played Bulgaria in the FIVB Volleyball Nations League Hong Kong match. Do You Hear the People Sing from the musical Les Miserables was popular during pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong in 2014 and 2019.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, Fa Gabo owner Eddie Dong prepares to sue city. Dong lists financial and personal damages and claims discriminatory enforcement of city odor codes. The Vietnamese restaurant in Roseway shut down in February after an 18-month campaign by an anonymous neighbor who complained to the city's Bureau of Development Services that he or she could not stand the smell of the grill and the meat. In one report, the city inspector wrote, quote, "The odors detected smelled like a wok dish," end quote. In the Sailor's Current, Whatcom County City debates removing fluoride from its water. The issue surfaced after some Linden residents and officials questioned the safety of the mineral additive, which is used to help prevent tooth decay. By 1992, 144 million Americans were receiving fluoridated water. By 2020, that number had climbed to over 208 million people, or roughly 75% of the country's population. In Whatcom County, however, only one municipality currently fluoridates its water, and that is Linden. In the Times-Colonist, former bookkeeper charged in theft of $1.7 million from nonprofit group. The money was used to buy such things as gold, cryptocurrency, and a new vehicle, Victoria Police said. Galina Kalikova, who was arrested by the Victoria Police Major Crime Unit in December, now faces charges of fraud over $5,000, theft over $5,000, and falsifying documents. Alacrity Canada, which supports early-stage companies and entrepreneurs, said in a statement it contacted police when it discovered it was a victim of, quote, criminal financial fraud committed by a former employee. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Parkinson Society British Columbia, the Michael J. Fox Foundation, doctors and specialists treating patients and scientists seeking a cure for the degenerative neurological disorder known as Parkinson's disease. April is Parkinson's Awareness Month in British Columbia. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 14th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 14th of April in 1999, the Sydney hailstorm, which caused more than $2 billion Australian dollars of damage, a record for a natural disaster in the land down under, some of the hailstones were the size of a cricket ball. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news, and you can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News on X, formerly Twitter, for news as it happens. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.